seconds. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket of will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
It's a brand new week of Drive Time Sports. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Happy to be back with you. So much to get into today. It's the week of the Super Bowl. This Sunday, Buccaneers, Chiefs, love the matchup. Brady versus Mahomes. We're going to have all week to talk about that. COVID kind of kills things a little bit, though. In years past, we have had just stellar Super Bowl lineups throughout the week. Guest after guest after guest. COVID with Zoom meetings, and that kind of kills that. But we're going to bring you good entertainment. Don't worry. We have plenty to get into today. We'll start on the local sports front. Last week, the Carbon Lady Dino swim team, they picked up a Region 12 championship. They didn't win region last year. They won state, but they didn't win region. They're going for a three-peat in the pool. They get this week off. They return next week. We'll talk about the dynamic performance that they had this past week at home to claim the Region 12 championship. We'll talk about the blockbuster trade that went down, the Rams and the Lions. Jared Goff on his way to Detroit, along with two first-round picks and a third-rounder for Matt Stafford. Who won the deal? I know that was the big debate on social media over the weekend. Look, there's no doubt the Rams got the better player. Like, they have a massive upgrade at quarterback. I don't think there's any doubt there. But people are hooked on draft picks. So we'll talk about who won it and how I break that down. We'll go over that in just a bit. Also, we have to talk NBA basketball. Last night, well, yesterday afternoon, I should say, right here on KOAL, the Utah Jazz, they had their 11-game winning streak snapped. Denver picks up the double-digit victory. Jokic was incredible in this game, went right at Rudy Gobert. The Nuggets and the Jazz, it's a bad matchup for Utah, isn't it? And I'm not saying anything negative about the Jazz. They got the second-best record in the Western Conference right now. But it's just not a very good matchup against the Denver Nuggets. We'll talk about that a little bit later as well. Let's look at the schedule in the NBA. The Jazz will get the night off. We won't see the return of Utah until tomorrow, when they take on the Detroit Pistons at home. Tonight, we get the Lakers and the Hawks at 5:30. Also, the Hornets and the Heat. Miami, defending Eastern Conference champions. They have Jimmy Butler back in the lineup. And yes, that makes a huge difference for this team. We'll talk about that later on as well. Minnesota will be at Cleveland tonight at 6 o'clock. Also, we get the Knicks and the Bulls. The Bucks play host to the Blazers. It's a fascinating matchup, especially the way Damian Lillard has been playing as of late. We get Sacramento at New Orleans, Houston at Oklahoma City, Phoenix at Dallas, and Memphis at San Antonio. All of those games are in the 6 o'clock hour. It'll be an early night as well because the nightcap's at 7 o'clock. It's the Pistons and the Nuggets. Denver has won 7 out of 10. If you're unfamiliar with the way the standings are shaping up right now in the Western Conference, the Clippers are a half game better than the Jazz, one full game better than the Lakers. So right now, number one's the Clippers, two's the Jazz, three's the Lakers. And then there's a little bit of a drop-off. You got the Nuggets at 4, Memphis is 5, Phoenix 6, Phoenix playing better. They've won 2 consecutive. Portland, again, Damian Lillard has just played great basketball. The Warriors have played 500 ball over the last 10 games. San Antonio, Houston creeping. Houston's won 5 straight. Everyone just wrote the Rockets off after they moved on from James Harden. This team's won 5 consecutive games in a row, and Victor Oladipo is playing pretty good basketball. And then in the East, you have Philly, Brooklyn, Milwaukee, Boston. And even though Indiana has 11 wins compared to Boston's 10, once I get past the 4 seed in Boston, I just don't take anyone else that serious in the Eastern Conference. We'll talk more NBA basketball coming up in just a bit. A brand new week of Drive Time Sports is off and rolling, and we'll return right after this.
What you listening to?
Big Sports Radio Guy.
Prepare the water cooler, that we may gather around it later and discuss things.
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
Certainly have a lot to get to on the show today, but as always, we'll start with local sports. Last week, the Carbon Lady Dinos claimed a Region 12 championship in the swimming pool. You know, these girls are going for their third consecutive state championship. That's so impressive. Going for that coveted three-peat. First step, it's always a region crown, and they took care of business this past week. We're going to talk about that and more right now with our next guest, Coach Allie Chamberlain of the Carbon High School Swim Squad. Coach, thank you so much for the time. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Definitely, Coach. It's been a couple of months since you and I last talked. I believe it was right before Christmas. I know this has been just an up-and-down season, but the fact is you guys did get a lot of competition in, and most recently, last week, you guys won a Region 12 championship. The girls do. I know when you look at the resume that they have built over the last 3 years, region championships aren't state championships. There is a difference. But for the girls to accomplish this, knowing that over the last couple of years, it was kind of difficult just based off of the nuances between region and state. So this is a great thing for this team.
Oh, it's awesome. I mean, the freshman class that we gained this year has been so good. It was hard losing the few seniors that we did, but this freshman class coming in has been strong. And it's honestly where we were able to get the depth to take on Emory and take that title back.
Yeah, I know that it's the ultimate goal for this team now is a state championship because you guys have done that the last 2 years. But I'm sure from just a competitive standpoint, when you fall short at region and you got that little break in between region and state, I'm sure it's not fun knowing that you gave up the region crown to someone else even though you feel you're the best team or you are the best team in the state.
Oh, it's hard. It's hard. But it comes down to, you know, the depth in every single event. And this year I was able to pull that depth back. Last year we were ahead until the backstroke, and I just didn't have any backstrokers. And that's where this freshman class came in, and I had a couple of brand-new sophomores come in as well, and they pulled that out for us. There's just a difference between, you know, region you have 5 teams, state you have 20 teams. So the numbers, that's where they skew.
So when you win, when you're a 2-time defending state champion and you win region, how do the girls react to that? Is it a big celebration? Is it just now on to the next? I mean, what was their reaction?
No, they're excited because it was hard losing that last year. I mean, we can win state, but we couldn't take the region title. It's hard. So they were really, really excited to have that back again, and it gives some good momentum going into the state title.
Let's talk about some of the girls that were top performers, and we can start with the 200-yard medley relay. Nicole Swayze, Jerissa Jarmello, Sophia Crompton, Alicia Chamberlain. They dropped almost 2 seconds, if I'm not mistaken, off of their best time of the season, and they did defeat Emory, who ended up taking second place by close to 14 seconds. It was a pretty dominating performance, and if I'm not mistaken, Coach, that was the first win of the day.
Yes, you are correct, and that we have a strong medley team, and I'm hoping that we can take that title again at state like we did last year with that team. Their strength is there. So we just got to have the confidence and the good mindset to get it done.
When you look at the way your team is designed, Coach, and even at region, another event where you guys dominated depth-wise was the 100-yard breaststroke. How many events do you feel you can actually pull that type of point total at the state tournament?
For us this year, looking in front of me, we have great depth in the 50 and 100 freestyle, as well as the breaststroke. All three of those are solid. We should have 4 people in the top 12 in all three of those events, really.
As far as the team that you're going to be able to take on the girls' side of the pool, and I know we'll get to the boys here in just a moment because they did some really good things as well at region. But, Coach, when you look at the COVID restrictions, I mean, how does this change or does it at all what you guys do in preparation for the state tournament? And then once you get there at the state tournament, how does it change?
As far as our preparing, doesn't change at all. As far as the state tournament, it changes quite a bit. We're unable to swim with the boys in the same time frame, so they've separated those meets out. That makes it hard. We don't have as many alternates. They took us down from 30 qualifying to 24. Like, it definitely has affected what state's going to look like and the opportunity that a lot of our kids will have. But the ones that are going, they're ready. They're ready to be there.
Do the boys and the girls push each other? I mean, quite a bit when you go to these meets. Do they feed off one another?
100%. They work out together in, you know, every day, 2-3 hours a day, swim all their yardage together. I mean, they are a team, basically, combined. So they definitely play off each other. They cheer for each other. They, yeah. I don't know. They're there for each other. They motivate each other. It's pretty awesome to watch. And it will be hard to not have them together as a team this year. But they can do it. And we'll get something set up so whichever one's not there is able to watch it remotely and cheer on just the same. So,
again, our guest right now is Coach Allie Chamberlain, again, of the Carbon Dino Swim Squad as they prepare for the state championship tournament next week. Coach, we'll jump over. We'll talk about the boys' side. And there was a record that went down, a 16-year record at Carbon High School, finally broken at region. That's always exciting when that happens.
Yeah, I love it. It's always a fun time. And that's something Gabe's been after since he was a lot younger. He wanted to join his sister on that record board in the 100 fly, and he finally did accomplish that.
Yeah, previous record was held by Thomas Peterson, and I saw Thomas talking about this. 16 years is a long time. He said, boy, I can't believe that it took 16 years for this record to be broke. When you look at the way Gabe did this as a sophomore, I would assume he breaks that a couple of more times over the next few years, maybe even does it at state.
Oh, I would think so, definitely. He has the potential. He can do it. That record will come down a couple more times before he's done.
Well, we'll talk about some of the other boys that did have a standout meet at region. Camden Chamberlain easily took first place in the 200-yard free. He dropped about 2 seconds off of his best time as well. And in that same event, you had Boyd Bradford, who was top three as well. So it turned out to be a pretty good event for the boys.
It did. Our boys team, I am proud. This is the first time in both assistant coaching and head coaching that I've been able to have a boys team that can compete against some of these other teams. I mean, we finally are able to put three relays together, and we're going to have boys in the top 16 on the second day, quite a few of them, which is so nice.
Coach, when you talk about building a program, and that's what you've had to do with the boys, how do you do that in such a short period of time? Because there's always talk about a culture change. You know, you've got to look at the youth programs. You guys did this fairly fast when you look at where the boys have come over the last 3 to 4 years.
I think a lot of it is the fact, I mean, I know it's the girls that are winning, but it is a combined sport. I mean, they swim together, they work out together, and people want to be a part of that process. And our swimmers are speaking for themselves and really getting the word out there as to what a great program this is and something that you would want to be a part of. And it's awesome. It's awesome how the word of mouth is spreading and they're really getting kids. I mean, I have some of these brand new kids that are just standouts and I love it. It's good. These kids speak for themselves.
Coach, as far as from now until next week, I mean, that is a big gap. And I know wrestling had the same issue. They had one competition last week. Now they have the divisionals this week. And then there's a big gap in between state. That's got to be difficult to work with, I would assume.
It's actually good. It gets us in the mode of just being able to taper our kids down good, prepare them for the state title, prepare them for their swims. There's a lot of, you know, starts and turns and just the little things that you want to tweak to try to get that little edge over someone else. So I actually like this break.
What about the kids? Do they enjoy it as well?
I think they do. It's nice. You know, we get region over with, and so it's less people in the pool because we just have the team goes from the whole entire team to just state qualifiers. So they are really able to focus more and get those yards in and get those little tweaks that they need in their strokes and their turns. It's really helpful for them.
Coach, has there ever been, were there any surprises this year? Was there any kid that maybe you just didn't think you would get this amount of production out of, or did things play out pretty much the way you anticipated?
I would honestly say these freshman girls coming in, they have, like, floored me. They're doing good. It's amazing how hard they work and how far they've come. And we do have a couple on the boys side too. A Cameron Jones coming in as a freshman. I had no idea he'd be where he's at right now, and it's pretty cool. Dallin Watson, this is his first year swimming. Austin Horsley. And then we got Tommy Dalpaz. So that's our medley relay right there, which we didn't even have that last year. So it is awesome that we've got these kids coming up really performing well.
All right, so I got to ask you, going back to the girls, you're going for a three-peat. Has it been more difficult this year than it has been over the last two?
I wouldn't say more difficult, just, you know, you have a lot more to live up to. And so it's not, this isn't just given to us, you know, we have to work hard for that. And I'm proud of these kids for doing that and putting everything they have into the pool. And hopefully it pays off. I really think it will.
Looking forward to it, Coach. I do as well. That'd be rare error to win three consecutive state championships. Coach Allie Chamberlain, again, of the Carbon Dino Swim Squad. Coach, always a pleasure to get you on. Thank you for the time and best of luck at state. I'm sure we'll catch up again after.
Thank you so much.
Again, that's Coach Allie Chamberlain of the Carbon High School Swim Squad. Next Friday, state championship competition. We'll see if the Lady Dinos can't pull through for their third consecutive state title. We're going to break for just a moment. We do have more Drive Time Sports coming up. When we return, we'll move over to talk NFL. Big trade that went down on Saturday night. You know, the Rams, the Lions, monumental deal. We'll talk about that when we return. What's it mean for the rest of the market as well? That's coming up right here on Drive Time Sports.
Now, more Drive Time Sports on KOAL, 107.3 FM and 750 AM, the play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
It is the week of the Super Bowl, and yet we're already talking about next season due to a blockbuster trade over the weekend. I think everyone could have predicted that there would be a lot of wacky things happening. The cap is dropping. Deshaun Watson requested a trade, as did Matt Stafford, and we didn't really know what was going to happen with Aaron Rodgers. It sounded like there was some uncertainty in Green Bay. Looks like that's not the case. Packers have no interest in trading Rodgers. But the first domino did fall on Saturday night, a blockbuster deal. The Detroit Lions send Matt Stafford to the Los Angeles Rams in exchange for Jared Goff, two first-round picks and a third-round pick, meaning that the Rams will not have a first-round draft choice until 2024 at the moment. The last time the Rams had a first-round selection, they took Jared Goff. That was their first selection in Los Angeles. Was I surprised that this deal was made? No, I wasn't. I mean, we said on the show last week, we were talking about the logical spots for Matt Stafford. And I said, Los Angeles is going to be a realistic spot based on the fact that A, Brad Holmes drafted Jared Goff as the new general manager in Detroit, and B, Matt Stafford's salary is somewhat similar to the massive extension that the Rams just gave Jared Goff. And as soon as a trade like this goes down, everybody wants to talk about who won and who lost the deal. And I do believe it's possible for both teams to win a trade. That's possible in any sport. But this specific trade is the closest thing that the NFL has ever had to a trade in the NBA. Hear me out on this. The NBA, you always see players, or bad contracts rather, dealt with an asset that is a draft pick, a first-round draft pick, because nobody in the NBA values draft picks the way they do in the NFL for a variety of reasons. One, we're talking about a 53-man or a 48-man roster in the NFL. It's completely different than the NBA. You can build, you're grabbing seven or eight players that you expect to make that 53-man roster every draft. At least that's the expectation, right? And the NBA, two draft picks, first and second round, that's it, unless you're Sam Presti. The NFL wants to stray away from that. They don't want teams essentially buying draft picks, and that's what happens in the NBA all the time. The Detroit Lions, in this case, they bought a draft pick. That's what they did. Because the Rams, the asking price would have been a first and a third and Jared Goff for Matt Stafford, but there were other offers on the table. Chicago, Carolina, Denver. They were among a handful of teams that had made aggressive offers to Detroit to land Stafford. Jared Goff's contract is not good. And we can get to the trade itself in just a moment. The Rams gave him an awful lot of money on an extension that at the time I believe he deserved. He took this team to the Super Bowls, the first time they had gone to the Super Bowl in 17 years. He showed signs of becoming a budding star. It looked like McVay had his guy in just his second year at the helm. McVay and Goff go to the Super Bowl. So the Rams give him a lot of money. Here's what Detroit inherits. Goff has $43 million fully guaranteed money left on his deal. $25 million in 2021. He's got a $2.5 million roster bonus on the second day of the league this March. And another $15.5 due on the second day of 2022. A lot of money still left on that Jared Goff deal. The Rams inherit $43 million remaining on Matt Stafford's contract. The Lions will have to carry $17.8 million in dead cap. The Rams have to carry $22.2 million in dead cap in 2021. So it wasn't a free trade for both teams. Here's the difference, though. The Rams are contending for a Super Bowl right now. And so I don't know that you can logically say one team won or lost the deal, because there's a lot of time before we finally see how this all plays out, right? But I'll tell you who got the better player in this trade. The Rams got the better player. That's a no-brainer. Matt Stafford has unique arm talent. This guy can make plays and throws that only a handful of players in the NFL are capable of making. One of those players is not Jared Goff. And I'm a Goff fan. I hope Jared Goff has so much success in Detroit. I like him. Bottom line is, he has regressed since that Super Bowl loss. In fact, he was not good in the Super Bowl. You go back and you watch the way Goff, you look at the missed reads, you look at the errant passes. He was not good in 2018, and you could give him a pass. It was the first time that the kid had played on a stage that big. You could give him a pass, right? He got worse last season. Granted, the Rams had a ton of injuries on the offensive front. Goff was throwing the ball 45, 50 times a game. That's not a recipe for success. Todd Gurley wasn't healthy. There were just a lot of variables. This year, when you go back and you look at the way the Rams season came to an end, a loss in Green Bay that Goff played fine in. He wasn't bad. But the offense is so limited because of the skill set that Goff possesses. That will not be the case with Matt Stafford, I assure you. And I'll tell you what should be scary for everyone else that's contending for a Super Bowl right now. Sean McVay is one of the top two or three play callers in the game right now. And Matt Stafford is his guy. Jared Goff was not Sean McVay's guy. I don't understand why the Rams gave him that huge contract extension if it wasn't McVay's guy, but he wasn't. He didn't draft him. Jeff Fisher and Brad Holmes drafted Jared Goff. So now McVay has his guy, this brilliant offensive play caller. We continue to see coaches from his staff getting poached for head jobs and coordinator jobs left and right. Now he has his quarterback. I don't believe the Rams gave up too much for Stafford. I just don't. And the reason I don't believe they gave up too much is because you're essentially trading a draft pick to get out of this massive contract that you gave Goff, and everyone knows it was a mistake. Everyone knows that. It was a mistake. But like in the NBA, the only way you get out of a contract like that is by attaching a significant asset. And I'll tell you something else when it comes to draft picks. And I think this goes along with any trade you want to talk about. Certain people prefer certain things. The evaluation of any trade has some subjectivity, and it reflects preferences, right? I don't value lower end first round picks the way some do. You may view this differently. You may look at that and say, look, that's the 20th overall pick, and I believe the Rams will be anywhere from 26 to 32. So it's going to be a lower end first round draft pick. You may look at that and say, that's how you build teams. That's fine. Like I said, there's subjectivity and preferences in every trade. But I will tell you, if you are a fan of the Rams, this is something you have to be excited about. The forward thinking. Because general manager Les Snead right now is trying to build a Super Bowl winner unlike anything we've ever seen before. 7 years without a first-round draft pick by the time 2024 rolls around, unless they find a way to slide back in, which they could. We've never seen that before. That type of forward thinking has to be applauded. And I'll tell you, I appreciate this approach more than a team that just accumulates as many draft picks as possible and openly tanks. You have to appreciate this more. The NFL has to appreciate this more from a product standpoint alone. The Rams, you could have made the argument, had the third best quarterback in the NFC West going into 2021. Goff is not better than Russell Wilson. I wouldn't take Goff over Kyler Murray. Jimmy Garoppolo, it's sevens at that point. You got a legitimate case to take Matt Stafford over Russell Wilson, even though Russell Wilson has had legitimate individual or team success. Matt Stafford does things that only a handful of guys in the league can make. The Rams now have a top seven quarterback in the NFL. Bottom line. So then the next question is, why does this make sense for Detroit? Well, because again, you have Brad Holmes, who drafted Jared Goff. This was the guy banging his hand on the table back in 2016 saying, we have to trade up to get Jared Goff. He's obviously a Goff guy. And let's be real, there are plenty of reasons to like Goff. You could use the argument that Goff has had more team success. It's not an argument, it's factual. Since Goff became the full-time starter in LA 4 seasons ago, there's only one other quarterback in the NFL that has more wins than Goff, and that's Tom Brady. Goff has as many Super Bowl appearances as Aaron Rodgers and Drew Brees, but the eye test also accounts for a lot. And if you watch McVay and you watch this Rams team, you see the limitations. That's not going to be asked of him in Detroit. And Goff is still young, and with the Rams assuming $22 million in dead cap space, it's a really low-risk move for the Lions. They can get out of this Goff deal at the end of next season if they want, and they very well may. I think the draft is going to be very telling for the Lions, but in my mind, this is low risk. I mean, you want to examine what Chicago could offer you for Matt Stafford? That's fine. I guarantee you they don't have a 26-year-old quarterback who went to the Super Bowl. They don't. Same thing could be said with Carolina. Same thing could be said with Denver. And I highly doubt that either of those three teams, any of those three teams, would have offered an additional first-round pick. You're looking at a first and a third. So to me, it made total sense for the Lions to go this route. This is a team that's rebuilding from the ground up. I think they have a very savvy general manager. I love Dan Campbell at head coach. And I also love Anthony Lynn as the offensive coordinator. And that's another reason why I don't hate this deal for Detroit. Anthony Lynn, one of the best people in the NFL, right? Little over his head as a head coach. But you can't honestly tell me that Anthony Lynn had nothing to do with the fast improvement that we saw from Justin Herbert throughout his rookie campaign. Now, I don't know that Goff's ceiling is much higher than what we've seen, but it's a good situation for him to be in. And so again, low risk for Detroit. You have two teams on the opposite end of the spectrum. And this is why I can't say Team A won or Team B lost, because Detroit is attempting to rebuild, and now they have draft capital, which a lot of teams absolutely value. The Rams, they got a top seven quarterback, and they believe that they would be playing this Sunday instead of Tampa Bay if they didn't have a quarterback that limited their ability to score points. And to be honest with you, I have a hard time disagreeing. So if you're going to make me pick who won this trade right now, I have to say the Rams won the trade because they got the best player in the deal. But I don't think a trade is ever finalized until we see how it plays out. How long does Matt Stafford play? He's 33. I think you get another 6-7 years out of him, and I think you're going to see a resurgence under Sean McVay. Really, the second half of his career is going to look a lot different than his first in terms of winning. Well, the Lions, it's step one in a long rebuild. Bob Quinn is gone. Matt Patricia's gone. And now you have a new quarterback in Goff, and you could be in a lot worse situation than Detroit. Fun trade. What does this mean for the rest of the market, though? If Matt Stafford fetches 2 first-round picks, a third, and a starting quarterback, what's it mean for Deshaun Watson? That's going to be a conversation tomorrow on Football Tuesday. Let's break for just a moment. More coming up when we return. We'll flip over. We'll talk NBA basketball. Yesterday, right here on KOAL, the Utah Jazz had an 11-game winning streak. It comes crashing down as Nikola Jokic took it to the Jazz yesterday, dropped 47 on Rudy Gobert. We'll talk about that and more when we return.
A long three from Thompson, and that is an NBA record. His 10th three-pointer of the night. Fires for three, yes! Golden State by 3.
This is Klay Thompson from the Golden State Warriors, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buskerini on KOAL 750 AM.
A little less conversation, a little more action, please.
Step away from the world of football for a moment. Let's talk NBA basketball. Jazz fans don't have anything to be sad about. I know that lengthy winning streak came crashing to a close yesterday right here on KOAL, falling to the Denver Nuggets 128-117. Look, the Jazz put together a terrific run, And when you take a look at the amount of ground that they made up in the standings early on, you can pocket an 11-game winning streak. That definitely goes a long way, right in the thick of things with the Lakers and the Clippers. We'll talk about that and more right now with our next guest, Jamison Welsh of BasketballNews.com. And Jamison, again, I enjoy the weekly conversation. Thank you.
Not a problem. Thanks for having me, as always. Definitely appreciate it.
Yep, love it, no doubt. And yesterday we had the Jazz and the Nuggets right here on KOAL. I know it wasn't the best of starts for the Denver Nuggets, although now they have won 7 out of 10 games. But I'm starting to see a reoccurring theme when the Jazz and the Nuggets get together. It's a bad matchup for the Utah Jazz. And I don't know that I'm not saying that Jazz fans need to panic, because again, they are playing some terrific basketball. This team is 4-4. They're now 15-5. A slip up on the road at Denver, it's not an easy place to go play. But it is alarming to me that Jokic finishes the game with 47 points. I think he only missed 9 shots in this contest. And if you go back to the playoffs, you also have Jamal Murray, who played outstanding against the Jazz. And yesterday, he wasn't terrible. I mean, he finished with 16 points, had 5 assists. He was a great distributor. It's a bad matchup, Jamison, for the Jazz when they play the Nuggets.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where Gobert gets exposed, because as good as Rudy Gobert is, you know, versus a lot of teams in the league, versus the elite bigs he has struggles against. And, you know, Jokic has his way with him often just based off of the matchup they have. And then also Jamal Murray, you know, he may be a bit inconsistent at times, but he tends to play very well versus Donovan Mitchell. So if you got two players that are out playing or playing up to your two best players, it comes down to the surrounding talent. And Denver has more surrounding talent than Utah at the moment. So that's what's come down to it. And to be honest with you, when you really think about it, that's how Utah kind of struggles versus other teams in the West, namely the Lakers. I mean, it's more one of those situations where it's a – how can I say this nicely? Utah is a good regular season team. But when they go against teams that are just as deep or if not deeper than they are, they struggle. And they're going to have to consider making a couple of changes if they're serious about winning a title.
I think that's fair. I think that's kind to say. I mean, you hit it right on the head. When Gobert goes up against elite bigs, he struggles. And I put emphasis on elite bigs. There's not many of those guys circulating in the league. It's not as if there's 10, 11 bigs in today's game that you look at and you say, okay, Gobert's going to struggle there. You mentioned Anthony Davis. We can talk Jokic. When they play the 76ers, you can talk about Joel Embiid. There's only a handful of bigs that Gobert will struggle against, but it's a fair point. He will struggle against the elite bigs offensively. We've seen it far too many times.
Yeah, I mean, especially when you're paying that guy $200 million to kind of make things happen, you know, you really want to, you know, make sure that that's getting taken care of. So when there's an issue there, when there's something where a guy is not able to hold guys to an average, I think if you hold guys to an average, it's okay. But you can't have Jokic scoring for 33 points in the first half. That just cannot happen. There's no way that can go down. So if that's happening, you're really in trouble. But the biggest thing for the Jazz is in really good games, who's going to be that third guy consistently for them? Is it going to be Clarkson? Is it going to be Bogdanovich? Is it going to be Conley? Is it going to be O'Neal? Who's going to be that third guy? Because it's always going to, like, we know what Donovan Mitchell could do. We know what Rudy Gobert can do defensively and what his impact can be. But who's going to be that third main guy for them? Don't have that answer right now.
Yeah, and in my mind, it's got to be Bogdanovich. I understand that Jordan Clarkson, you and I are very familiar with Clarkson. We've been familiar with this guy's game since he came out of Mizzou. I know what Jordan Clarkson is capable of doing, and he can average anywhere from 17 to 20 a game. There's no question. But at some point in the NBA, you have to start paying attention to the dollar amount based on expectations. And with that being said, Bojan Bogdanovic has got to be around that 17 to 20 mark as well. And I know right now he's averaging 14 per game, but that's in 20 games so far this season. It's not a small sample size anymore. Jamison, I got to see that point total go up at least 5 or 6 points.
Oh, I'm with you 1,000%, especially for a guy that's capable of playing that way. It's not like we have unrealistic expectations. Like, he's capable of being a big-time player in this game. However, we have not seen that thus far. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. I mean, last season to go, Utah has obviously been very, 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 very good thus far. We'll see if they can keep it up. But, you know, they've been impressive. They have been impressive. I'm just curious to see how this roster ends up shaking out, because they have Conley on an expiring deal. They just signed Gobert and Mitchell to extension. So kind of curious to see, you know, how they formulate this roster going forward.
Yeah, and you mentioned Mike Conley, and I know it is a contract year for him, but look at this stage in his career, this is Mike Conley. And that's not a bad thing. That's not a bad thing at all. He can give you 30, 33 minutes of ball game. He's going to average around that 17.7 assist mark. That's okay. He's efficient with the basketball. That's all you can really ask for him, right? Just be efficient with the basketball, float around that 17-point mark, hand out 7-8 assists per game, and just be efficient, a 3-to-1 assist-to-turnover ratio right now. You'll take that from Mike Conley. I don't care what his dollar amount is because you knew what was going to happen when you traded for him. This is a good Mike Conley. This is what you're going to get out of him.
Absolutely. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, he's steady. At the same time, I don't know if he's the guy to get you over the top. I mean, at the end of the day, you want to be able to win the game. You want to be able to compete for a championship. He's steady. I don't know if he's that guy to get you over the hump, though. And those are two way different things.
No doubt. No doubt. Again, our guest right now is Jameson Welsh of BasketballNews.com as we talk about the NBA. Let's talk about the return of Jimmy Butler. And this is big when you look at the Eastern Conference because we know we have four or five players in the West. You look in the East, right now it's top four. The Miami Heat, they have not lived up to the expectations that were built getting to the NBA Finals last year. But then again, they haven't had Jimmy Butler. Now that he is back in the lineup, how much of a difference is it going to make for this Heat team, and how active do you believe Pat Riley will be over the next month, month and a half, in trying to fill some of the holes that have been exposed with this Heat squad?
Man, they're in a tough spot because they have the same 71 days you know, that the Lakers have, but their roster is different. You know, Jimmy Butler had to expend so much energy in order for them to win games and to even be close in the finals that that's a toll on them that he may never recover from. Their roster is so up in the air right now because they have done one of the good jobs of balancing a roster that's flexible but also able to contend. Usually going to be one or the other, either all in on contending or you're flexible and you're trying to move pieces to contend in the future. So I'm curious to see what they do, but as of right now, to be honest with you, the Heat, they need other guys. They need more consistent play out of their players. But I just don't think the guys they have on the roster are good enough to get it done. Bam is great. Jimmy is great. Everyone else is kind of trying to find their way. Hero has a really good future in this league, but I don't know if he's a consistent third or fourth guy yet. We got to see. But they're in a really tough spot with the lack of rest they had coming back into the season and the roster they have currently.
Yeah, Jimmy Butler's going to get this team to the postseason. I mean, they're going to get into the playoffs if Jimmy Butler is healthy. We saw a tremendous difference already in the win against Sacramento. I know it wasn't the prettiest of wins, but again, you get Butler back. He scores 30 points, gets to the foul line. And that's something that I don't think we put enough emphasis on when you look at a player that can get to the foul line. And Jameson, as I look across the board, especially with Goran Dragic being out, Avery Bradley's been out, when you look at this lineup outside of Jimmy Butler, they don't have another guy. Bam's not that guy. They don't have anyone else that can consistently get to the free throw line, and that changes the complexity of a game, and Butler can do that.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things to where you got to have as many guys that can handle the basketball as possible and can make plays off the bounce. Right now, they don't have that many. Even Dragic is a little older now, but they have a very interesting roster. However, they're always going to be contention to make a big move. So we're not surprised that they wound up with a Bradley Beal or whomever else on the market. It really wouldn't, because they have the assets contract-wise to make a deal happen. But, you know, until that happens, we'll see.
Yeah, and I know we talked about this last week. They really pulled themselves from the James Harden sweepstakes pretty early from all reports.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't have necessarily the picks, and they had the players, though. I mean, if they wanted to deal Hero and Robinson and Nunn and Iguodala's contract, they probably could have made it happen, but they didn't have the picks. So the picks were the thing. Looks like Houston wanted it, and they didn't have a lot of those to give away at this time, so that's why that didn't go through.
All right, well, let's talk about the Brooklyn Nets for a moment because they did win the James Harden sweepstakes. It's been a mixed bag of nuts so far. Again, very difficult to insert a player like Harden and have instant success. There are going to be some growing pains. Back-to-back losses to the Cavs, back-to-back wins over the Heat, a win over the Thunder and the Hawks, beating teams that you would expect them to beat, but a 149-146 loss to the Washington Wizards, that looks bad. It's just not a good loss.
especially how they lost. It's not that they lost, it's how they lost.
Right.
They were up in the game, and they kind of played around at the end. They threw a bad pass at the end, and Westbrook hits the three, and it was a really bad loss. One of those losses where, I mean, again, at the end, the guy missed the layup as well. So it's not like it was one of those things where they got outplayed. They, it's a game they should have won. They just kind of blew it at the end. But defensively, they got to figure out something. They're giving up almost 150 in regulation is not good. Like, that's a lot of points per quarter. You're basically giving up 33 points a quarter. And you're not winning any games that way. You're not winning a championship that way. You're just sorry, like 30, almost 35, more than 35 a quarter. You're not winning games that way. You just, it doesn't work that way. But they're entertaining, but you're not going to win a championship. So I'm curious to see what adjustments Steve Nash and D'Antoni and Jacques Vaughn make, because there's no way you can continue on this way. There's just no way. It doesn't work that way.
You really think that Steve Nash and Mike D'Antoni are going to be able to make adjustments? I mean, that's the one thing that I have never seen from Mike D'Antoni over his entire head coaching career, be it Denver, Phoenix, L.A., New York, Houston. This guy doesn't make adjustments. And in my mind, when you look at the coaching staff that Steve Nash put together, Mike D'Antoni is that grizzled vet that's supposed to help a head coach with no experience make these types of adjustments. That's why that didn't make sense to me.
Yeah, no, I get where you're coming from. I totally understand where you're coming from. However, when you think of it like this, they're in a situation to where, to be honest with you, they have a lot going on, and they have a large staff. Obviously, D'Antoni's there for the offensive stuff, but Steve Nash is the head coach and facing the name. He's going to have to figure something out and make something happen, because you can't continue this. There's no way this can continue. There's no way. It just does not. You don't win like this in the NBA. It does not happen. If they keep on going this route, they will lose.
Jameson Welsh, again of NBAnews.com, BasketballNews.com, excuse me. Jameson, before I let you go, please let the listeners know where they can find more of your work. The podcasts have been fantastic. You dropped a great one over the weekend. Please let the listeners know where they can find them.
Yes, BasketballNews.com. I have a podcast with James Posey. We had Phil Handy over the weekend, Lakers assistant coach, who's specializes in developmental skills and training. He was amazing. We have a lot of those type of pods in the network, and a lot of different videos and shows, live shows, different events, writing, whatever you need basketball-wise. The site has an amazing site. The app is also good as well. I'm also on Twitter at the Jameson and ESPN 1100 in Vegas, and also KDON 720 in Vegas.
Jameson, I always look forward to the conversations. Thanks again for the time, and we'll do it again soon.
Not a problem. Thanks for having me.
And with that, we are out of time on this edition of the show. We'll be back to do it again tomorrow. All kinds to talk about on Football Tuesday. I'll be joined in studio by Vinny Rondinelli. Be safe. I am out.